Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, don't touch that dial. It is Today's Issues, but Tim is away today along with Ed Vitagliano, and the B team is here, though, to take care of you on this Thanksgiving week. Fred Jackson here along with Abe Hamilton III and also Walker Wildman. We are back again. You know, it may be what's considered a holiday week, but the news, and maybe it has a lot to do with Donald Trump being the president-elect, is not going to stop this week. In fact, this morning when I came in quite early, Donald Trump was tweeting out that he had canceled a meeting with the New York Times today after a meeting he had yesterday with some media execs. He had canceled it, and he reminded them that he didn't really like the way they do news, et cetera, et cetera. But I just found out before coming into the studio, that meeting is on again. So Donald Trump and a delegation from the Trump Towers are going to walk down to the New York Times in about 50 minutes from now and have a meeting. And I would love to be a fly in the wall for that one.
Man, that would be great.
There's no love lost between those two. But as I say, there was a meeting yesterday, and the people like Wolf Blitzer were called to the tower, and Lester Holt, who's the NBC anchor. I mean, we're talking some pretty heavy-duty media people out there, and they were all called in. And according to some reports, there was a New York paper said he ripped the media as liars at an off-the-record meeting. That doesn't surprise us at all. Doesn't like the way they do news, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, Walker, Donald Trump is going to be the most unusual president of the United States for a lot of different reasons. But when it comes to media relations, I mean, he showed this during the primaries. He showed it during the election campaign. He is not going to be beholden to the mainstream media.
No, and that's one of the reasons he got elected. I mean, his people like that. I mean, we saw Romney and McCain in 12 and 8. You know, they didn't know how to play the media. They got, quote, manhandled by the media, you know, for lack of a better word. But Trump, well, he's been doing this his whole life, you know, with all of his TV shows and everything else. He knows how to play the media, and he's done it well. And I think the media is, I think the elites in the media are, they don't like it. They're mad.
Sure.
And they've been mad for months now because he's been playing them.
But you know what? Here's the thing, I think, Abe. Donald Trump has perhaps figured out, or he's come to the conclusion, I should say, rightly or wrongly, that he can do it. He can be president of the United States without the help of the mainstream media.
Yeah, I think he has made that calculation. I think that was part of the appeal of Ronald Reagan, in that whenever he had issues, he would make a direct appeal to the American people. Then with the advancement of modern technology, it's made it all the more easy. I mean, all you need is a, you know, a handheld GoPro camera.
Yeah.
Seriously. And you can, you know, you can communicate to the world, to the entire world, without the use of the mainstream news media.
Yeah, which is exactly what he did. And we're going to get into this a little bit later in the program. Yesterday, his team created their own video of Donald Trump, which went on YouTube, outlining what he plans to do with executive orders in the first 100 days.
Yeah.
So he created his own program. And so that's why, as I say, we'll get into that a little bit later. But this morning, also happening out of New York, the education secretary, John B. King Jr., Barack Obama's education secretary, showed that they're not finished ruling yet. But this is what he had to, what he said. He sent out a letter this morning, urging governors and school leaders in states that allow student paddling to end a practice he said would be considered, quote, criminal assault or battery, end quote, against an adult. As I say, he released the letter this morning asking leaders to replace corporal punishment with what he called less punitive, more supportive disciplinary practices that he said work better against bad behavior. Now, I'll tell you what, Abe, if they were just coming into office and this came out, this would be chilling, because if you are willing to call on schools to end corporal punishment, paddling, and referring to it as perhaps as criminal assault, I think the next step would be against parents and corporal punishment.
I don't think you're far off on that. I mean, a lot of these same people have already indicated that they believe that this is an inappropriate means for discipline, period. Mm-hmm. So the only area, or should I say the most immediate area that is subject to their control, or at least influence, are the schools. Mm-hmm. But you better believe it, they would absolutely turn their attention in this regard onto parents. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, they have no regard for the word of God.
Right.
So when things like spare the rod, spoil the child, none of that stuff comes to fruition at all right. for these people. So I think you're right about that.
It's amazing, Walker, this in this letter that went out to governors and school leaders, this is what he's had to say. This is the Education Secretary, John B. King, Jr. Quote, the practice has been clearly and repeatedly linked to negative health and academic outcomes for students.
Show me the research.
He said, and he actually had a conference call with reporters on this. He went on to say, it is opposed by parent organizations, teachers' unions, medical and mental health professionals, and civil rights advocates as a wholly inappropriate means of school discipline.
Show me the research.
And well, who's missing from that list of
the
people?
Kids who and the adult and the parents.
Bingo.
Yeah, exactly.
Bingo.
Here's the thing, and I'll make this connection, and some people may disagree. As some people have referred to them as the snowflakes that we have out there right now protesting. You know, that there's a generation, and I know there are great schools and great teachers, and so I'm not casting the net completely out there, so be very careful about that. But at the same time, compared to when I went to school, which is many years ago, back in the 60s when I was a little boy, in fact, I got in trouble the second day. I had to go stand in the corner in grade kindergarten. I was a bad kid. We had a strap, you know, that the teacher used a strap and hold out your hand and whack, whack a couple of times. And parents who weren't afraid to give a spanking on the behind. And you know what? Kids, and again, general statement, kids in general were much better behaved. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a neighborhood that far from it, they weren't all Christian homes and that sort of thing. But there was a common kind of thinking in our society at that point that it wasn't a criminal assault or battery to discipline your children.
No, and in fact, when I was in school, which was not that long ago, you know, yesterday. 10 or 15 years ago. Yeah, well, last year. No, when I was in grade school, I would remember if I would get in trouble, which was often because I was the class clown, but my dad would come up there and he would take the teacher's side or the principal's side. And that's what you need. You need parents who will say, I'll come up there, and if the principal wants to paddle you, I'll just watch and approve of it. You need that and not this division between the parents battling the school authorities, you know, and all the drama where the parent tells the kid, I got your back. No, you know, you didn't do anything wrong. That's the environment that we have now. Teachers are afraid to discipline. And this, when you have this doesn't help, what the education secretary said.
Well, and we have evidence because the idea just didn't start with the education secretary. We've got probably 10, 15 years, you know, of a psychology that's set out there, you know, if you paddle the behind, you dent the personality of the child for life. And there's just no proof of that. But, you know, they quote these liberal research organizations and this general mental health professionals and civil rights advocates is saying it does damage to the child. There are centuries, Abe, of evidence out there that says no.
And once again, the first source of authority that I would turn to is the Holy Word of God.
Yes.
And secondarily, as you cited, centuries of evidence. And this is something that I experienced because I went to a school where they did paddle when I was in high school, and there was a move to remove that, and many of the parents fought against it. They fought against it. Part of the reason why the parents sent the kids to the school where I went to for high school was because of the reputation for discipline. You know, but this is the day. I mean, you talk about snowflakes, and it's not just snowflakes, and this is something that I think we often miss. If you study the scriptures, especially in Paul's writings in Romans and in other places, he cites children as being disobedient mm-hmm. and rebellious children as not just being a common phenomenon of adolescent development, but it's cited as evidence of spiritual decline. And here you have, you know, this bureaucracy at the federal level announcing from on high an issue that should be decided by the parents.
Right.
Period.
And this all comes from a program started by President Barack Obama. This push to end corporal punishment.
Surprise, surprise.
Builds on the administration's. They actually have a folder on this of things to do, I guess, his checklist. And it's, quote, rethink discipline campaign to, and I'm reading here from the Associated Press, to create safe and supportive school climates, King said. It also lines up with Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative, meant to address persistent opportunity gaps facing boys and young men of color. So what are they blaming for? If they're talking this way, are they blaming the violence in Chicago on parents who discipline?
I don't think there's much discipline going on in Chicago at all. I would say that is probably the main problem, and with the breakdown of the family structure. But this is, you can't, the need for discipline, when there's no discipline and authority figure in your life or in a school system, the only thing that's going to fill that vacuum, fill that gap, is sin, like Abe said, and that sinful, rebellious nature. And that's the problem with a lot of our schools and a lot of our youth now, is there's nobody filling that authoritative vacuum. And the kids, the kids sense when there's no one that's in charge.
Exactly.
Because then they become in charge.
Exactly. Well, let's get another opinion on this. We're joined right now by Frank Turek, Christian apologist and host of the program right here on American Family Radio, Cross Examined. Frank Turek joins us, I guess, from home in Charlotte, is it?
I am, Fred. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. I don't know if you've been listening in on the conversation here about the comments this morning from the country's education secretary, John B. King, where he's written a letter and he met with reporters this morning and basically saying he wants to put an end to student paddling. He says it's a practice that would be considered criminal assault or battery against an adult, and it's all part of Barack Obama's Rethink Discipline program. So he wants to put a stop to paddling. And we were saying, Frank, just before I think you came on, schools today, parents tomorrow, being found guilty of criminal assault for simply disciplining their children.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I heard you talking about the proverb that talks about do not spare the rod. But I think Trump's probably going to call him down to the Oval Office and give the guy a good spanking. that could probably solve everything if he just did that. Of course, he's probably going to get rid of the Department of Education, because all it is just one big bureaucracy.
Yes.
Education traditionally Amen. In our country has been a local issue. So why there's a federal Department of Education is a mystery to me. Of course, probably because it just sounds like it's something we should have, when in fact it does really nothing to help advance education but take funds away from the classroom. So I think he ought to get rid of it, and he ought to just – I mean, part of his whole campaign promise was to get rid of Common Core, mm-hmm. and I think he'll follow through on that, and if he does, that'll be a good thing.
Absolutely. Frank, this is Abe here. And
hey, Abe, how you doing?
I'm doing great. First, I agree with you 100%. We do not need the Department of Education. Trash it, please. Mm-hmm. But the question that I have for you, and I think it's related somewhat, we have witnessed, and I describe the current makeup of the American political parties, whereas the Democrat Party really has now become the Socialist Party of America. But during the Democratic primary, you saw this groundswell of support, primarily driven by young people, supporting Bernie Sanders. Mm. Even though in the not-too-distant history, we've had the tearing down of the Berlin Wall, the Cold War, and the opposition to communism, but we're seeing now a resurgence amongst America's young people embracing socialism. My question for you is, what do you think are the factors that are contributing to that, and then how do you think that is going to affect the national and the national political landscape going forward?
Well, I think education is one of the big problems. We don't educate people as to what socialism really is and what it means and how it has failed everywhere it's tried. It doesn't work because it's a misunderstanding of human nature. Mm. Human nature does not allow us to just divide everything equally and expect to have the same level of production. We won't. People will not produce to line other people's pockets. And we, William Bradford learned this when he came over with the Pilgrims, that if he made the farm one big commune, they didn't produce as much food as if he gave each individual family their own individual land and said, "You, what you grow, you keep." And people were a lot more productive then. In fact, a friend of mine, Jay Richards, I don't know if you've heard his name, but he has a wonderful book called Money, Greed, and God. Have you ever heard of this book? If you haven't, you need to get Money, Greed, and God. And Jay Richards goes through all of these different sorts of governments that one can have from or economic systems that one could have. And he says, look, there's no perfect system. It's just that capitalism is the least worst system. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It creates the most wealth and brings more people out of poverty than any other system. Socialism does not work because it misunderstands human nature. Also, I think part of that, Abe, is the fact that you've probably heard the adage that if you're not a liberal when you're 20, you don't have a heart, and if you're not a conservative when you're 40, you don't have a brain. Mm-hmm. because after you realize, if you've had enough experience, you realize that while it's nice to be, of course, for the poor, we're all for the poor, we all want to help the poor, the question is, how do we help the poor?
Exactly.
It's an ends and means discussion. Everybody wants to help the poor. The question is, what's the best means by which we help the poor? We do not help the poor by continually making it easy for them not to work, by making them dependent on government. We make it easier for them to become productive members of society by providing them with more opportunities to make it on their own, and by continually subsidizing them without any requirements upon them. It just zaps the American spirit, it zaps the human spirit to do what is right. It's like the old joke, you know, how do you starve a liberal? You hide his food stamps under his work boots.
Ooh,
good one, Frank.
Because you need to give people encouragement to work. Mm-hmm. They need motivation. You want to make them independent of government, not dependent on government. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I say that all with the necessary idea that we have to have a safety net. Now, and traditionally, the safety net has always been provided by the church, but now it's provided by the government, and the government doesn't do it as well as the church does.
Frank Walker here. One question. It seems like the liberal ideology automatically assumes that human nature is inherently good, and
yeah,
that children and people, if you just, you know, you can have some barriers, not much. You don't need much. Everybody will kind of behave themselves in the world. Why is that not a dangerous theory and ideology to assume that what we see as sinful humans can somehow manage themselves without any authoritative figures?
Well, of course, and I think that the easiest way of illustrating this is just suppose that all law enforcement said, okay, tomorrow there will be no law enforcement. Anything you do tomorrow will never be prosecuted. You can do whatever you want. How many businesses do you think would survive? Mm-hmm. How many people do you think would survive? I mean, there would be murders. There would be rapes. Best Buy wouldn't survive. Mm-hmm. No car dealership would survive. People would just, and atheists are always fond of saying this, well, you know, if you didn't believe in God, would you suddenly rape, pillage, and murder? No, it doesn't have anything to do necessarily with belief in God. But if law enforcement were taken away, yeah, there would be a lot of rape, pillaging, and murder. There would be. Mm-hmm. Just because it's easy to be bad, it's hard to be good. You need the restraint of the law, and more importantly, you really need the restraint of the Holy Spirit to restrain people from doing evil. That's the best way to change somebody's heart is to get them saved and sanctified. So I think it's much easier to be selfish than it is to be selfless. It's much easier. I mean, think about the kids you've been talking about. Why do we need to paddle kids? It's not because they're inherently good. It's because it's easy for them to be inherently evil. Mm-hmm. I mean, they call it the terrible twos for a reason, right? It's all about them. Selfish this, selfish that, me, mine. You know, the first kid a word learns is not yours. The first word a kid learns is mine, mine, mine. By the way, going back to what you guys were talking about earlier, Ronald Reagan said this, socialism not only, or it says socialism only works in heaven where they don't need it and in hell where they already have it.
Oh, Ronald Reagan.
You've got some great lines that you've come up on your own today. There's another, and I think it wraps around what we've been talking about here, a society, a person, and a society and a culture reaps what it sows. Mm-hmm. And Frank, I'd like to get your comments on the developments this past weekend of four more shootings of police officers.
Yeah.
And in San Antonio, there's been an arrest now of Otis Tyrone McCain, 31, of San Antonio, with the assassination of a police officer there on Sunday. And there's been some comments this morning from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund in the wake of all of this. Law enforcement officials say there's been an alarming spike in ambush-style attacks. 60 officers, including the one in San Antonio, were shot to death on the job this year. That compares to 41 in all of last year. And 20 of the 60 who were killed, of the officers killed this year, were purposely targeted by their assailant, compared with 8 last year. Now, that's almost a threefold increase in police officers being targeted because they are police officers. They weren't chasing anybody. They are being targeted. And, Frank, I'd like to get your response to this. I believe we have to take this back to the doorstep of the White House, to President Barack Obama and Attorney General Loretta Lynch.
Yeah, they bear part of the responsibility. The other people that bear part of the responsibility, or most of the responsibility, obviously the people doing it. But yeah, the president and the attorney general have done nothing to use the bully pulpit to ensure that our law enforcement are not targeted. You know who else is partially behind this? Not directly, obviously, but in hiring people to create racial tension, and that's George Soros. Mm-hmm. And if you don't think that's true, go to AmericanEvangelicals.com, and you can see it documented there, AmericanEvangelicals.com. So there's a lot of people to blame for this. One thing I think we need is somebody back in charge who will use the bully pulpit, and that's used in a nice way, mm-hmm. to state the truth and to change the cultural aspect or change certain cultural trends by using the pulpit to say, this isn't right, you need to stop doing this, you need to stop looking at everything in terms of race and identity, and we need to get back to responsible law and order. Now, that's not to say there might not be bad cops out there, I'm sure there are, mm-hmm. but clearly the vast majority of cops are doing the right thing, and for citizens to target police officers in cold blood, like they have been doing, is obviously an outgrowth of this idea that somehow cops are the enemy, and that needs to change.
Absolutely. This Abe here, Frank, I've said that it appears that there's been a cumulative effect of, as you said, the first level of responsibilities are the individuals who are perpetrating these heinous crimes. Secondarily, you have those who are leaders in the various sectors of our society. But there's been a societal downgrade in the perception of many among us of the role that law enforcement officers and even our military servicemen and women that they play in our society. And that cumulative effect has almost enlivened or enraged, mm-hmm. but empowered people to commit these heinous crimes.
Yeah, it has, and it needs to end. That's why we need people from all levels of society in the private and the public sector to speak out against this.
All right, our guest has been Frank Turek. Frank, more on your thoughts on things. Where can people go on the website?
crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it.org. Also download our free app, CrossExamined, in the App Store. One more quote from you on Marxism. Marxism has not only failed to produce human freedom, it has failed to produce food.
We don't want to go hungry.
No, we don't. Yeah. It's lunchtime. Let's go eat.
All right. Thank you so much, Frank Turek.
Thanks,
we appreciate
God bless
it.
You.
All right. Take care.
See you. Bye-bye.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues with Fred, Abe, and Walker. We're back with much more right after the break.
Hi, Ray Pritchard here. During this Thanksgiving season, we all take time to consider the goodness and the kindness of the Lord. Join me for a special Thanksgiving broadcast called His Love Endures Forever.
Join Ray on Thanksgiving Day for His Love Endures Forever, 11 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are going to the Holy Land in March. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I only lead one tour a year to Israel. It's not my day job. It's just an annual tour that I do as I learn from my dad how to take folks to Israel. And we're going to have a wonderful experience. Most of the folks going are listeners to American Family Radio, are supporters of American Family Association. And we're going to have a great time March 9th through the 17th. If you want information on this tour of the Holy Land, you can do it two ways. You can call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, that's families with an S, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll put a brochure in the mail to you. And if you want to go online, you can visit us at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. Again, won't be long till we close out this tour, so if you want more information, let us know.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. Dateline, Gulfport, Mississippi. Attorney Paul Newton Jr. is suing Popeye's Fried Chicken because he choked on a chicken breast. This according to the reporting of television station WLOX. Mr. Newton says he ordered a two-piece meal with red beans and rice and a biscuit. But instead of giving him a knife and fork, he was provided with a plastic spork. Mr. Newton says he was unable to cut the chicken, so he had to tear off pieces with his teeth. One of the chicken chunks got lodged in his throat, requiring emergency surgery.
If you choked on your chicken and you had to get your chicken removed from your throat, it's not because Popeyes didn't apply a knife to the box. Maybe you should slow down eating. Nobody eats chicken with utensils.
Exactly. Look, it's one of the first things we teach Southern boys and girls. Fried chicken is finger food. That's why we call it finger licking good. Case closed. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments at afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And we are back. Tim and Ed are off this week. Fred Jackson, Abe Hamilton III, and Walker Wildman sitting in. See, it takes three of us to replace the two of them.
Yep.
What does that say? We just don't have as much to say, Abe. You're too quiet, Abe.
Well, you don't want to get me going. I'm trying to be nice.
Walker, we're going to have to change that.
Well, just say something. We all know what gets Abe stirred up. We just need to say something that gets him stirred up.
Well, let's try this one. There are reports out of Washington, D.C., and we're quoting Fox News here, that the incoming Trump administration has perhaps, we're quoting reports here, has perhaps decided not to pursue any legal investigation, continue legal investigation, pursue charges against Hillary Clinton and or the Clinton Foundation. And that's going to disturb a lot of people. Politically, you might understand it from the point of view that let's move on, clean slate, et cetera, but I think that many of the American people believe that justice would not be served unless the investigation is at least completed. And I'm thinking particularly of the Clinton Foundation. All right, now we got it going.
If, and it appears that the new Attorney General will be Jeff Sessions,
yes,
subject to him being confirmed, obviously, by the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. If he does not continue the investigation into the Clinton Foundation, there will be lots of Americans, including yours truly, who will be very upset.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why we currently say the phrase President-elect Donald Trump is because the American people are sick and tired of double standards.
Right.
That there's one set of laws and rules for us plebeians that are part of the proletariat, and there's another set of rules and laws that apply if you have a certain amount of money and popularity and fame. At a minimum, the investigation in the Clinton Foundation has to continue.
All right. You are a former prosecuting attorney, correct?
I am.
State of Texas.
Yes.
And elsewhere?
And Louisiana.
And Louisiana.
Yes.
In what you have seen so far.
She should be in jail.
Okay. Moving on.
He's no. right.
She should be in jail.
I'm talking Clinton Foundation.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, not just the Clinton Foundation, the email stuff
right.
okay.
is enough to be in jail. You have military service members who are in jail now mm-hmm. for yeah. doing far less than what she did.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you have the sailor who took a photograph
yes.
of the inside of a submarine
right.
just to show his friends. And
Yeah, it's a fraction
she
of what she's done.
She should be in jail.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And justice will not be served unless that happens.
No. Right. At a minimum, the investigation should continue and the issue should be presented for a grand jury whether or not they will indict her. Mm-hmm. The Clinton Foundation is another egregious violation where she put a for sale sign on the front lawn of the State Department.
Right.
I mean, can you imagine if there would have been a Republican who did that?
Yes.
Yeah,
the media wouldn't stop calling for that person to be prosecuted. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they would be prosecuted.
And they
under
would
an Obama
be prosecuted.
Yeah,
they would be prosecuted. And so I, for one, I'm sick and tired of these double standards. Either we are going to be a nation of laws or we're not.
Right.
You know, it's the attorney general nominee, mm-hmm. Senator Jeff Sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you followed his career.
Somewhat, not closely, but I know a little bit about it.
Do you believe he would be the type that would say to President-elect Trump, look, we cannot let this go. In the interest of fairness and justice mm-hmm. in this country, for the reasons you just outlined, we cannot let this go.
Based on what I know about Jeff Sessions, I would say yes. But, you know, color me, you know, scarred from recent history, having various Republicans go to Washington and magical mm-hmm. things happen to where they don't come through on promises, I am not naive enough to think that it's beyond the pale of possibility for Jeff Sessions to take marching orders from, let's say, a President Donald Trump that says, well, we're not going to pursue that. We're on to other things.
Yeah.
Well, Walker, I think there would be a price to pay for the Republicans
yeah.
In 2018 because we would go right back to the Tea Party days. And which the conservatives helped elect a group of conservatives. They thought they would go to Washington and do something, mm-hmm. and they didn't do it.
Yeah, and let's remind our listeners: this is not petty. She didn't get a speeding ticket. This is putting the national security of this country at risk, which she did by using a private server while serving as Secretary of State that was housed in a bathroom. And the FBI already admitted that they're 90% sure that foreign governments hacked this server and have information. And but for put politics aside and parties aside, for any attorney general or any president to not at least, like Abe said, at a minimum, let the FBI continue the investigation and convene a grand jury and make a decision, that shows that if you're in the system like Clinton is, then you get a pass.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you lose to your opponent, then there's more sympathy for you and you get even a larger pass. And I think Trump said in the last debate, he said, if I'm elected, I will appoint a special prosecutor to look into this mess.
Well,
and if he doesn't do that, mm-hmm. then he's not keeping his word, first of all. And second of all, he's going against what he's been campaigning on, which is that we need to drain the swamp and we need justice for everyone, and that's not the. And I think it'll be a huge mistake if he doesn't follow through.
The Fox News report, are they quoting Kellyanne Conway in their report?
Yeah, she did an interview with Morning Joe on MSNBC,
mm-hmm.
and she essentially said right here. I'll quote her. She said, "I think when the president-elect, who's also the head of your party, tells you before he's even inaugurated he doesn't wish to pursue these charges, it sends a very strong message, tone, and content, and content."
Wow.
So that, and that's from Kellyanne Conway. That's not from some
yeah.
anonymous source.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's, it's safe to say, very close to Donald Trump.
There'll be outcry within the Republican Party if they don't pursue charges against her.
And rightly so, Abe, for the reasons that you gave us.
And this is, you know, this is a lot of people's concern with Donald Trump, is that he's hot, he's cold. There's a meeting with the New York Times. There's no meeting with the New York Times. And there's a meeting again with the New York Times. You should be in jail. Maybe you shouldn't be in jail. And this is also why he needs to hear consistently from the American people.
Yeah.
He needs to know when we are displeased by what he's doing. Because one of the things that I'll say two things here. One of the things that is the most attractive appeal for Donald Trump, or also one of the things that could be the most off-putting, is that he doesn't owe anybody anything. So he's free, kind of, to speak, to do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. And so in a lot of ways, that's fantastic. But then some ways he could wax, you know, completely dismissive. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a traditional Republican anyway. So it doesn't matter if there's outcry from the traditional Republicans. But the one thing that it appears to me that he values above pretty much anything else is winning.
Yeah.
And I would submit that he does not want to be a one-term president. So he needs to hear from the people who have supported him and let him know, listen, you keep this up, get in line to be the next George H.W.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
know, one-termer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and he may be viewing this as a approaching this from a hands-off standpoint, and that is that once he's sworn into office, he leaves the FBI and the Department of Justice and Jeff Sessions, assuming he's Attorney General, he just leaves them alone and lets them do their thing. And then even then, the FBI could recommend an indictment on the foundation investigation. And Sessions, assuming he's Attorney General, could follow through with that. And Trump, unless he intervenes and says, y'all need to slow this down or stop it, they could still follow through with this without the president's consent, so
right.
to speak.
Yeah, and if Trump was to intervene in that kind of decision, then our situation hasn't improved over Barack Obama.
No, not in the least bit.
The charge against the attorney general has been she has politicized the office. Barack Obama has politicized the attorney general's office. And, you know, that's what the American people voted against back in November, two weeks ago today, Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Donald Trump made a lot of promises during the election campaign, and yesterday, at least, what many conservatives would consider a good sign, he made his own video on YouTube, and that may be an indication of one of his primary ways of communicating during his administration. He's going to produce his own reports out there for people to have a listen to. And one of the things he did yesterday was outline his priorities for his first 100 days in office with regards to executive orders that he can put in place. And he repeated in the first few seconds of this video the idea that he is out to make America great again, and part of that is creating jobs for Americans. So let's have a little listen to what he had to say yesterday, and we'll discuss it. This is Donald Trump yesterday, by way of a YouTube video, directly to the American people on what he intends to do in the first 100 days.
As part of this plan, I've asked my transition team to develop a list of executive actions we can take on day one to restore our laws and bring back our jobs. It's about time. These include the following. On trade, I am going to issue our notification of intent to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a potential disaster for our country. Instead, we will negotiate fair bilateral trade deals that bring jobs and industry back onto American shores. On energy, I will cancel job-killing restrictions on the production of American energy, including shale energy and clean coal, creating many millions of high-paying jobs. That's what we want. That's what we've been waiting for. On regulation, I will formulate a rule which says that for every one new regulation, two old regulations must be eliminated. So important. On national security, I will ask the Department of Defense and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a comprehensive plan to protect America's vital infrastructure from cyber attacks and all other form of attacks. On immigration, I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker. On ethics reform, as part of our plan to drain the swamp, we will impose a 5-year ban on executive officials becoming lobbyists after they leave the administration, and a lifetime ban on executive officials lobbying on behalf of a foreign government. These are just a few of the steps we will take to reform Washington and rebuild our middle class. I will provide more updates in the coming days as we work together to make America great again for everyone. And I mean everyone.
Well, there you have it, guys. What your reaction? We'll start with you, Walker, to that. I heard 5 items that are pretty well politically safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. The one item that I still have questions about is the ban on lobbying once you leave the executive branch, et cetera. I don't know. I mean, you can sign, from what I understand, and I'm no legal scholar, Abe may talk about contracts, but you can sign a contract when you go to work for the Trump presidency. But I don't know, unless there's some law through Congress, I'm not sure how enforceable that contract is. You could probably sue if someone breaks the contract, but I don't know what kind of enforcement power you would need in order for that 5-year ban on lobbying after you leave the executive branch, would work.
You can do it contractually. Or you can have a law passed that can prohibit it, and it's something that clearly would fall within the ambit of the governmental authority in citing its desire to maintain it to be free from untoward influences, so on and so forth. So he could do it, and it's something that I think that would be popular enough to pass.
Yeah, like I said, most of these are politically safe. I don't think he's going to be chastised by his constituency over getting out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Mm-mm.
That was a big one during the election campaign. But here was something. When he got into immigration, I thought this was kind of interesting. The one thing that he mentioned was dealing with what he called the abuse of visa programs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these would be people who could come into the country legally mm-hmm. to work for a short period of time. And he believes there's real abuse there. I assume it has to do with employers who bring people in when they could hire American citizens for jobs. Again, it's kind of safe, but he didn't say anything, Ed, about other things with regards to immigration that he mm-hmm. talked about during the election campaign.
Yeah, and one of the biggest sources of illegal immigration are those who come legally with visas but overstay their visas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the 9/11 operators of the aircraft that flew into the Twin Towers were just that.
Right.
They had come over with visas and overstayed them.
Mm.
So I do think that's a significant part of the illegal immigration problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a short video. When I subbed in for Brian on Focal Point, I went through at length his agenda for the first 100 days. So he talked about immigration in more expansive terms.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think this is his attempt to try to communicate, you know, broad brush overarching points he wants to make directly to the American people without being subjected to editing and whatever through mm-hmm. the mainstream media sources.
I think the plan on energy is just going to be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be a huge job creator.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, for the coal industry, for other carbon-based industries, mm-hmm. What it means for getting the oil out of the ground and mm-hmm. You know, gas pipelines and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly a safe one and will create many jobs.
Yeah, well, you look, Obama has been the master regulator of jobs, if you look at it indirectly. But you look at the Keystone Pipeline a couple years ago, we had that big debacle. I don't even know if they're even finished with that yet.
No, it's still waiting.
Yeah, and so, and then, you know, I believe it's off the West Coast, there's some oil out there Obama created basically a no-go zone where you mm-hmm. can't drill out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you open up all these opportunities for jobs and for productivity, it will have an impact on the economy. And it's mm-hmm. not going to take much. It's very sensitive because it's been so regulated. It doesn't take much to pull back for it to have a good benefit.
One of the things we talked about in the newsroom this morning of the early days initiatives that we can expect from the Trump administration, and he's talked about it even in the last couple of weeks, is infrastructure improvement. And he has said $1 trillion spent on infrastructure. Ding, ding, ding. Can you remember shovel-ready program from
yes.
Barack Obama? Mm. And a lot of people, and we have some people in the newsroom investigating this morning, is, okay, $1 trillion, you haven't told us where you're going to get that money, Abe. And I mean, if he's going to do the same thing that Barack Obama did, you know, well, let's just borrow and add to the deficit of the country. Now, apparently he did say, well, we'll get the private sector involved with this. Well, what do you mean by that? I mean, private sector going to donate money for to build bridges? I don't think so.
Yeah, this is another one of those things where what's going on here? Because this is one of the agenda items people like Chuck Schumer are chomping at the bit.
Which is not good.
Exactly.
Not a good sign.
Exactly. Yeah. Chomping at the bit. You know, he was on, you know, the Sunday talk shows talking about this is an area where he believes the Democrats and President Donald Trump can find common ground. And I would just suggest to you, if you have a project that Chuck Schumer is eager to join you in, it's probably not the greatest idea. And he even went as far as to say that, you know, it might be able to achieve bipartisan support because it won't be something that will blow up the budget necessarily, but it could be used the way that it could be paid for is by just adding this additional $1 trillion to the deficit, an additional plan for deficit spending. And, you know, this is, you know, I'm hoping and praying with everything in me that President-elect Donald Trump is ready to transition from campaigning to governing because American people need to know how do you plan to pay for this?
Yeah.
You know? Well, what you get into is the danger of this quid pro quo once again. And like you say, Abe, if Chuck Schumer is giving that as an example of working together,
right,
then are we into the backroom deals again? Okay, Chuck, you give me agreement on this. I'll do this for you. And you don't put up too much of a fuss when Senator Jeff Sessions comes up for his hearing before the Senate. And the first appointee that Donald Trump might make to the Supreme Court, let's make a deal time. And this is the kind of thing that people are just fed up with.
Yeah, when you get into the specifics of this, if you tell me the federal government's going to be in charge of any kind of construction deal, it's going to be horrific. It's going to take forever, and they're going to waste money, and nobody's going to be – there's going to be no oversight, no accountability. If they want to do some real infrastructure reform and infrastructure rebuilding, they need to block and some of the money that the states send to Washington that gets mixed in this pile of money to spend. They just need to block it and send it back to the states and allocate it for – infrastructure and let the states do their own infrastructure rebuilding. That way it's more localized and it can be managed better. But you do these massive bills that come out of D.C. Nobody knows where the money goes. There's no accountability. There's no way this can turn out good. And especially my main concern is where they're going to get the $1 trillion from.
So we have to be vigilant as conservatives. We have to be vigilant now. You know, there's the celebration for many conservatives over the election victory of Republicans and Donald Trump. But, you know, that vigilance, you just don't go away. That vigilance has to continue because of recent political history in this country.
Yeah.
Even when Republicans are in positions of power, all of a sudden, Brother Don, our founder, when he used to host AFA Report, the noon show here on American Family Radio, I remember him saying through the years, and I had the privilege to co-host with him at that time, and he'd say, something happens when they go to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they start drinking a different water up there,
yeah,
and they like the job, they like the positions of authority, and they get cozy, and, I mean, all of a sudden, the umbrella of operation becomes, Abe, compromise.
Yeah.
Compromise.
And which is why immediately following the election, I said to everyone, God has extended mercy, but that's not the end of the ball game. It's just the beginning.
Yeah.
God has given us the opportunity to crawl on our hands and knees back to the starting line. And so if we were praying before the election, we need to amp it up now and combine our praying with action to hold Donald Trump accountable. The damage that has been done to our country has been vast and deep.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a long, long, long way to go. So it's things like this that I believe are indications just how much we need to be vigilant and diligent in committing to doing our best and doing our role in helping to maintain the type of government and move toward the type of government that we know we need with
right.
the full recognition that government will never be our salvation, but we want to interact with government in such a way where the church remains free, lean, and flexible to do what God has called us to do.
Yeah.
Amen. Amen. Now, to that point, Walker, yesterday the American Family Association put out a press release with regards to drawing attention to the issue of Common Core and who that the President-elect Trump may be looking at with regards to Secretary of Education and his education policy.
Yeah.
And he's been talking to some people, apparently, that are full advocates of Common Core. And I remember him saying during the campaign, we got to get rid of Common Core.
Yeah.
So why would you be talking to people who are advocates of Common Core?
Well, there's many different. There's much speculation as to why he's bringing in people that seem to fundamentally disagree with his plans when it comes to education and many other things. I don't know. Maybe he likes the media back and forth and confusion on who's going to get what. I'm not sure. Maybe he's legitimately considering people maybe he disagrees with for these positions. I hope not. But here's our statement, and I'll read directly from the press release. AFA, the American Family Association, we pointed out three specific areas of education that we feel strongly about. And then I'll quote Tim Wildman, who's the AFA president. The 3 points starting with education. Education is mentioned nowhere in the U.S. Constitution. Thus, according to the 10th Amendment, education should be returned to the states. This is what Abe and Frank Turk spoke about earlier. We need no federal Department of Education. Secondly, Common Core must be abolished once and for all, as it gives government bureaucrats the power to control local education by federalizing it. So no Common Core. School choice, lastly, school choice is a must in order to have a thriving education system in communities across the country. And then Tim says, quote, it is AFA's position that anyone being considered for the important position of Secretary of Education who does not agree with the above positions is not qualified to serve under a Trump administration.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Abe. The Democrats were beholden to the teachers union, who were advocates of Common Core. The teachers union, it's like Planned Parenthood. They're never going to give money to the Republican Party. I mean, so what would be the pressure? I'm trying to figure out what would be the pressure on a Donald Trump president to maintain Common Core. Where would the pressure come from?
To be quite frank about it, the pressure would have to come from establishment types that he would be listening to. You know, you have establishment types that some of them have been, you know, behind the scenes working with some of the crafters of the Common Core materials or whatever that stand to make a buck off of Common Core. And also, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, of those who really see it as being an educational, you know, boon for the American educational system, which I can't imagine who would embrace that after seeing it unfold. The very concept of it just completely belies anything we know about human nature. You know, God has made us all individuals. Why would we welcome being forced into a specific box in order to evaluate whether or not you are, you know, educated, adjusted, you know, academically? I mean, right. It's just insane. So I'm telling you, I'm praying.
Yeah.
Here's where I see the challenge, guys, to this is that over the years, including, you know, presidents like George W. Bush and going even back, there has this been handing out of federal dollars to an education system now that in large part has become dependent on federal dollars. Think, for example, school lunch programs. You know, we saw how Michelle Obama used that as a stick with regards to menus in our nation's schools' cafeterias. So this is going to be one of those challenges out there that I'm sure is going into the calculation that we're seeing in the Trump transition team right now. Like you were saying, Abe, we are going to have to continue our prayers. We are going to have to continue our vigilance because now he's got pressure to perform, and he's listening to more voices than he did during the election campaign, and we will have to be vigilant. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues, Fred, Walker, and Abe. We're going to take a little break for news right now, and we will be right back with more of Today's Issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.